Summer is usually a great time for food choices for people in Wisconsin. Backyard gardens, farmers markets, grocery stores brimming with fresh produce. But for a lot of people, they don't have those choices because school is not in session. A lot of kids get their nutrition during the school year, so we need your help. St. Vincent de Paul has a food pantry that gives your neighbor in need some of the same choices you have. But to keep it going, we need your help, your donations, support the food pantry. And you can do one of a couple things. Drop off an extra bag of groceries from the store or your local farmer's market. Also, a $50 cash donation feeds a family of five for a week. You can organize a food drive, whatever it takes to keep that food pantry going this summer while the kids are at home. Let's do what we can. Here's what you do. You contact St. Vincent de Paul at svdpmadison.org. That's svdpmadison.org. Let's work on this together. And welcome to another podcast at slysoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now, 2nd District Congressman Mark Pocan from South Central Wisconsin. Congressman, this happened a long time ago, but I've got to play this story because I've been waiting for your reaction. This is Channel 27's coverage of Paul Ryan the day that you went back to your hometown and did a listening session.
Speaker Ryan toured this paint and supply company this afternoon. He also talked with reporters. He was very pleasant, but it was clear he did not want to talk about a number of issues. The speaker did talk with local high school students at a program here that allows them to get exposure to the business world. Ryan says instead of hosting raucous town halls when he's in his district, he prefers to schedule events like this. The speaker believes a town hall on health care would be populated by people from out of state and would devolve into incivility.
I'm doing it in a way so that constituents don't go into a harassing environment. And so I want to make sure that constituents don't be agitated and walk into a harassing environment. I want to be able to interact with constituents in a way that they feel comfortable as well.
The speaker says he's held telephone town halls on healthcare and will continue to do that and meet with constituents about the issue in other ways. Speaker Ryan also deflected questions today about Donald Trump's handling of the firing of FBI Director James Comey. Ryan saying the FBI investigation into Russian collusion in the election is still going as our separate House and Senate investigation.
Now, don't you owe him a little apology? That the courage of that man to protect his constituents. Don't you feel just a little silly now?
So he was busy talking to paint cans and high school kids rather than people who are concerned that they have a pre-existing condition and they're going to lose their health insurance.
He was protecting his constituents.
Well, you know, and the best part is, and you know this from town halls, you know, we did a few in the beginning, and you know, I'm a frugal Wisconsinite. They cost taxpayers about, give or take, $6,000. You get a lot of phone calls. I think it's 50,000 phone calls that usually go out to let people know you're doing one, and then they ring everyone again to get on the call. The thing is, the numbers really drop while you're doing it, and you pick and choose what questions you're answering. So really, it's kind of a infomercial, but then you answer the questions that you choose to answer. It's about as far removed from a town hall as you can get. And to make that as the excuse, you're doing that instead of actually talking to your constituents face-to-face, just doesn't quite pass the smell test.
Well, but I remember a time when Paul Ryan did do regular listening sessions, but he used taxpayer money to advertise him on some of the most expensive radio stations in Milwaukee.
Oh, no, I mean, at least a town hall, you're having a human interaction. But, you know, the fact that the new trend is to do telephone town halls or just nothing and then somehow blame that you're going to have it too ruckus and... Yeah, that's your job. That's your boss's. It's like if the boss called you into the office and said, no, I don't want to go in because I think he's going to yell at me. That's not how it works in the private sector.
Well, if you'll remember in 2010, Russ Feingold, he didn't hesitate to go to Waukesha County, to Pewaukee. Now, that wasn't a pleasant experience for him or during the when they attempted to recall him back in, 1997. With all the anti-abortion stuff, he never shied away from going to the most conservative parts of the state because that was his job.
Exactly. You know, and you know, when I did the town hall in his district because he wasn't talking to his constituents, it was my hometown of Kenosha. You know, and I've got, you know, my mom and my cousins, but, you know, my friends from high school and their kids and their grandkids. And, you know, they had a lot of questions, fair, legitimate questions about what the health care bill meant. And this is the guy who drafted it. So to claim that somehow, he's still interacting, 300 people didn't show up at 1 o'clock on a Friday afternoon because they're getting enough contact with Paul Ryan.
He wrote the bill.
Exactly.
And he also said over state lines. Well, I'm sorry, if you live in Zurich, Illinois, or you live in Palatine, the repeal of the Affordable Care Act affects you too. Why not?
Well, doesn't he support selling health insurance across state lines? I mean,
well,
methinks he protesteth a bit too much.
That is actually one of the worst ideas they've ever come up
right.
with, and you know what the game on that whole thing is.
Well, and yes, and here's the thing that we talked about there. If Scott Walker in Wisconsin decides to be one of those states that changes the conditions around pre-existing conditions, you could be in another state, and the business you work for could buy a policy in Wisconsin where it's not required, and suddenly people in Colorado are going to be affected by a bad decision in Wisconsin.
That's right. It's kind of like corporations incorporating in Delaware because of their rules, right?
Exactly.
Congressman Mark Pocan with us. It's liesoffice.com. All right. I don't even know where to begin. You have, from the very beginning, you have seen something that you can't divulge to the public that you're very troubled about. So on a daily basis, Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson and the conservative echo chamber are feeding their audience, this is all for nothing and no laws have been broken. Even Alan Dershowitz has really become very bad on this as well, saying there's just no reason for a special counsel in this situation. Are you still convinced that there's some pretty serious problems here?
I think everyone with at least a couple brain cells is convinced there's something that we got to get to the bottom to at this point. I mean, you know, yes, I've seen more, okay, in a classified document, but that's a small part of this. Most of the information that's coming out these days is coming out through leaks in the White House, leaks in departments, good journalism where they're finding out facts that where someone lies to Congress and they point those lies out. But the fact is, every week, every day, sometimes multiple times a day, we're getting a more clear picture of what is starting to look like. Not just we know there's Russian interference in the elections. That's like an absolute based on 17 intelligence agencies. But now we're starting to see what really looks like collusion between either people in the Trump campaign or does it go farther up, people who are now in his administration. But clearly, you don't fire someone with the one reason and then later admit it's just because you wanted them to quit investigating you. And now they've got to the point they've had to bring in a special prosecutor within the Department of Justice. But the way it's written, they still are responsive to this deputy attorney general that supposedly wrote the document that said to fire Comey. So this is still not as independent as we need. That's why I think we've been asking for an independent commission to come in and do this independent of Congress, of where all the problems have been, and let's just get to the bottom of it. And, you know, quite honestly, again, the Wisconsin common sense smell test, if you have nothing to hide, you should be asking for this as well so you can move on with your agenda. And the president instead, you know, has made this a complete mockery because, you know, no one can seem to tell the truth in the Trump administration.
Now, the truth is Donald Trump can fire Rosenstein and replace him with someone that would fire Mueller, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's always going to be kind of a cloud over it. And quite honestly, we had a classified briefing last Friday with the
Deputy Attorney
General.
Tell me how that went.
Let's just say instead of a classified setting, we should have did it at the Kennedy Center with all the dancing that was going on. So there was not a lot of direct answers fly. Most of the answers were, well, we can't talk about it now because it's a pending investigation. So again, you know, I think it was a checking of the box to say they met with Congress. But quite honestly, I think members of both parties were getting upset. In fact, if anything came out of there, a few little things, you know, I think that we'd already kind of heard that were out there. But I think the thing that I thought was the most significant is rank-and-file Republicans, not the ones just in leadership, the ones that get and do talking head stuff on Fox News. They were saying, how come you didn't answer Adam Schiff's question? How come you didn't answer another Democrat's question? They're just as concerned because they're starting to see this preponderance of circumstantial evidence that's getting to a really, really big pile of preponderance. And I think they've got equal concerns coming on. So I thought that was probably the most telling, is that, and they also didn't appreciate being disrespected by having absolutely no answers offered to any questions during the entire briefing.
Is it my understanding that Rosenstein, when he wrote the memo, he knew that Trump was looking for some other way to fire him, and kind of knew he was being used?
Well, this is one of the questions he couldn't answer because it's currently under investigation. I mean, no matter what we asked him, we came back to that. But clearly, from all accounts that are out there, you know, he already knew the direction when he wrote the memo. And, you know, for the memo to be, because how poorly Hillary Clinton was treated, the first excuse they came up with was clearly beyond any kind of believable level. And then, you know, Donald Trump himself, to his credit, you know, said, no, I got rid of him because he was investigating me in Russia.
Yeah, that was an incredible moment. Now, maybe I'm a little different, but I like James Comey. I think he's an honest man, maybe an imperfect man. I think
your assessment is correct.
Yeah. So I don't think he deserved to be fired over this. And as far as how he handled the Hillary situation, I think it was a mistake, although she partly put herself in a kind of a precarious situation there. But to fire him over this is clearly shows me that Donald Trump is very concerned about this investigation.
Oh, and then, you know, the idea that both Dick Durbin and I believe it was Dianne Feinstein were told the week prior that they were asking for more money to continue this investigation. That you know, somehow isn't a part of all of this, that he was trying to intensify the investigation the week before they're fired. I mean, there's just too many smoking guns. I mean, you know, I know you like your smoking guns, Sly, but I mean, this is a lot of smoke out there. That we,
hey, you know, listen, you had your picture shooting a gun, okay?
So, I mean, there's enough out there that we need to get through this. And I think, again, the biggest observation I had from that briefing last week was just that there's a lot of rank and file Republicans who are equally concerned.
Your district has conservatives living in it. There are conservatives who no doubt get a steady diet of this. This is Sean Hannity the other night on Fox, who the day that it was announced that the FBI had a person of interest as one of the top staffers to the White House, and it was divulged that Trump had made those unbelievable comments to the Russians in the Oval Office. Here was Sean Hannity's take.
All right, this week we've been telling you about the five groups that are aligning to try and destroy President Trump. Now, they want to undermine the will of you, the American people. Now, these are the threats that we're facing. One, the deep state. And, of course, they're going after President Trump, selectively leaking information. Just look at the disgruntled, fired former FBI director James Comey. He's using the press to carry out his own personal vendetta against President Trump. Number two, the destroy Trump media. These rigid, left-wing, Hillary-supporting ideologues pushing their tinfoil hat conspiracy theories night after night, breathlessly hyping everything up, one fake news scandal after fake news scandal. Number three, the Democrats, really sore losers, obstructionists. They refuse to accept the results that you gave us this election season. Then you got weak Republicans, establishment Republicans, feckless, no backbone, no spine. They never supported Trumpers' agenda. They're a threat to the president. And number five, never Trumpers, holier than thou, elitist outlets, National Review, Weekly Standard. They want vindication. They want relevance. And in the last 2 weeks, a new pattern of attack is emerging. This is what I want you to pay close attention to. The New York Times, Washington Post, constantly using anonymous sources outside of the White House, dropping one huge bombshell report just before the national newscast every night at 6:30 p.m. And then, of course, cable coverage right after.
He's against...
Wow. You know, I'll tell you, it makes Nixon look like a confident man. I mean, right? Like everyone, you know, from the left to the right to the middle, is all after... This poor guy had nothing to do with the fact that half of his staff somehow had, you know, contacts with the Russian government, and that the same hour they would put out a fake story that he would be repeating it somewhere. And it had nothing to do with any of those things. It's all, wow, everyone is out to get this poor guy's life.
Do you think there's a chance that Donald Trump himself doesn't necessarily get caught up with direct collusion with the Russians? Maybe some of his staff does, but his financial ties to Russia end up being a problem in his taxes?
You know, Sly, I'll tell you what you just said. What's really interesting is there is more to this than just the Russian interference of the elections. Because I think, you know, we are starting to see more and more. It looks like there was some collusion between some people on the campaign staff and maybe in the administration. I don't know how high up that goes. But we're completely forgetting about things like the fact in 2008 when the economy crashed and he was still getting loans, he may have gotten a bunch of loans from Russia, and that could be one of the things that's still out there. So it's not even the election issue. It's a lot of other things, that why we've been asking for his taxes, why we need to know these things for the decisions he's making. When you have Russian officials in your office and don't allow the U.S. media and allow the Russian media, and when you want to lift the sanctions after you read the report from 17 intelligence agencies that no one else, Democrat or Republican, said we should lift sanctions, I mean, this is all so tone deaf. There's something else out there. And so it doesn't have to be directly related to the Russian interference in the elections. There are many other issues that we are seeing with Donald Trump, with this president, that I think make people concerned and why some people use the I word, impeachment.
Including your colleague from Michigan, Justin Amash.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really good example of.
By the way, what do you think of him?
You know, he's an interesting guy. I work with him on privacy issues. I work with him on some peace issues. He is really far more of a libertarian than a Republican, I think. But, you know, he serves obviously as a Republican. But he's an interesting guy who is open to working with whoever to advance the issues he believes in.
He seems like a straight shooter.
He is. And the fact that they go after him alone should tell you something. But I, right now we're working
with him and Walter Jones are always getting it, right?
Yeah, but I'll tell you. But Amash, I mean, like right now we're working with him on something, on a resolution of disapproval on the arms sales to the Saudis because of what could happen in Yemen and the starvation that it could.
Will you explain that to people? Most people, yesterday when Trump was giving his speech, John Nicholson sort of filled me in on what you were working on with this. I was very concerned when he started praising the Saudis and how they're dealing with Yemen.
Well, exactly. So what's happening is a civil war in Yemen that essentially the Saudis are claiming Iran is picking one side, so they're picking the other. This is all, religious wars in many levels,
right.
Sunni,
sure.
Shiites, et cetera, that's going on. The problem is there's right now 7 million people in Yemen who are getting food assistance just to survive, and the port that they're talking about potentially bombing is where 70% of the country's food comes in. We've been told by international groups that deal with starvation that literally 500,000 people will be thrust into full famine if this happens. So our concern is above, we don't care about, I guess, as much the picking a side in a war in another country as we do saying that if we sell arms to a country that uses them to bomb that port and to bomb the country in such a way that people are pushed into starvation, then we are responsible for perhaps 500,000 people dying because they don't have access to food.
Well, there were so many ironies yesterday, the president praising the Saudis when in fact they have let some very dangerous radicals that are practice Wahhabism spreading hate and violence and terrorism throughout the world is a pretty amazing thing. But that duplicity doesn't just start with Donald Trump.
Well, it'd start with the whole idea. Everyone who backs Donald Trump who thinks that somehow Barack Obama tried to bring Sharia law here. What do you think you have in Saudi Arabia, right? I mean, suddenly we hug one form of it but not another form of it because most people don't understand what they're actually saying they don't like. I mean, this is part of the problem in the Middle East. We're just not the experts on this, which is why, generally we should have other people leading and we can provide some additional support rather than just kind of going into every single skirmish in the region. But in this particular case, I don't want to be, as a country, complicit by through an arms sale with maybe 500,000 people or more going into direct famine in a country because of this current sale of arms. So it's something that, in a bipartisan way, we've been trying to address.
Congressman Mark Pocan with us at SlysOffice.com.
If you listen to this podcast, you clearly appreciate quality. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson is a multifaceted guitar shop offering guitar instruction, new and used guitars and amplifiers, and all accessories. We offer guitar repair of the highest quality. Instead of experiencing the total hassle of a big box store or a snarky boutique, Take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson and experience what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We love guitars.
And we're back at slysoffice.com with Congressman Mark Pocan. Let's talk a little bit about Medicaid cuts, health care, the president's budget, and what you see coming down the pike now that Congress passed this awful, awful bill. I read a piece in the Washington Post this morning about the president's budget, cutting people's food assistance, cutting huge cuts in Medicaid. Is this going to happen?
I think if we all continue our activism, we can do our best to slow it down and try to affect it. But, you know, when you want to put in, you know, the amount of money that they're trying to put additional to defense with no new revenue whatsoever, and you're trying to do tax reform for the wealthiest to lower the corporate rate at the rate that you're going to see that Donald Trump is proposing, there's no way you can do all that and have programs survive. So what they're doing is the cuts are going to be deep into almost every other department, and that affects, you know, programs from PBS to Pell Grants to Meals on Wheels to Medicaid to, you know, you go down the
literally
list.
Literally taking food out of the sick, yes, the poor, the young, to feed the rich.
Well, there are dumpsters at Mar-a-Lago, Sly, that you can dive into. So I just don't understand the concern.
Oh, God, if it weren't so true.
I know. Isn't this sad? I mean, so tomorrow we're expecting, I think, the full budget to be released by Donald Trump, and, you know, we're going to try to compare and contrast it to the Progressive Caucus budget because we're the only released other budget out there. And, you know, you don't have to go down the path that he's going down whatsoever. There's a completely different way I think we can show people what the federal government could do, and we're hoping to make sure that we highlight the differences throughout this week.
What do you think is going to happen with health care?
Yeah, I'll tell you, they're in a tough spot because, you know, the president's going to obviously put a lot of pressure on the Senate. However, the Senate seems to be concerned on the Medicaid cuts. Maybe not even so much the pre-existing condition, but the Medicaid cuts clearly have gotten under people's skin. So we're going to have to see another version coming from the Senate, but it'll be different than the House version. In fact, we haven't even sent the House version over yet, Sly, because they may have made a mistake on how they did it for reconciliation. They're very, very, very confident they did it right, but they're not giving it to the Senate yet, just in case they didn't do it right. So I don't know how confident that is.
Well, we haven't seen the scoring on this yet, right?
We're supposed to have it this week. I believe Wednesday, I believe, is the day. And then, you know, we can have a better, you know, look at what their version did. But I think the Senate still is probably going to do something different no matter what. And then it'll have to go to conference committee and then come back to the House and the Senate. But the fact that, just think about it, Sly, they're so confident this bill is great. They made everyone take a plank walk, you know, passed it by a couple votes, and they now realize they may have screwed up how they did it, so they can't even send it to the Senate yet. I mean, this is like amateur hour at worst, and unfortunately, 24 million people could lose access to health care. Older Americans could pay five times more. People on Medicaid are going to lose access, including, in Paul Ryan's district, almost 50,000 people will lose access to health care, as projected by the Center for American Progress, if this budget happens the way the House passed it. And we're just trying to get the word out. That's why, you know, I went to Kenosha to have a town hall, because if Paul Ryan's not going to tell people in my hometown how it's going to affect them, somebody better do that.
He really tried to avoid even saying anything about you. Have you bumped into him since this all happened?
No, I haven't. But, you know, I'm probably going to come back to the first district to talk about it some more because, you know, I think this is the kind of thing we're going to need to do to make sure that people understand what they're really doing. We can't let them get away with this telephone town hall because that's really a taxpayer-paid infomercial. We've got to make them be accountable. And if not, I mean, there is an accountability that's going to happen in 2018. People have to know what their elected representatives are voting on. So I do town halls on a real regular basis in my district. I don't mind if I do them in another district. I might be going to Iowa next week and doing it in one of the districts there. I just want to make sure that people know what their representatives are voting for.
Oh, who is that poor, sorry soul that was doing a listening session in Dubuque the other day?
That might be the district I'm going into, Sly. I think you know, he walked off of interviews and everything else. But
Blum, or is that his name? Blum, yeah?
Yeah. And that used to be Bruce Braley's district. It used to be a Democratic district. And, you know, this is a representative who keeps saying he didn't like the process, he didn't like this, and he didn't like that, but he voted for the dog. And at some point, you're accountable for those votes. You can't just say how much you didn't like everything and then still vote on it. That's not, you know, that's lying to your constituents. And I think we need to make sure that people in Iowa who are going to be affected by this, or people in the First District of Wisconsin and Paul Ryan's district, know what that bill was that they supported.
Hey, are you a little surprised, and I don't know, maybe you don't want to comment on this, but that Glenn Grothman has gone to Washington and become a Ryan soldier as opposed to being a little more quirky and independent?
I think he's still quirky. I don't think that's changed. But he's one of the people, one of his big beefs was that you had adult children staying on their policies till 26, and I think that's something even the Republicans kept. So I haven't had a chance to...
He what? He had a problem with that?
Yeah.
Has he moved out of his parents' house?
He is, yes. He lives at his own...
He lives in Glen Beulah, which I think is one of the funniest things, that there's a place called Glen, a congressman named Glenn who lives in Glen Beulah, Wisconsin. I'm not kidding.
I'm not going to get myself in trouble, though, Sly, because you like to do that.
I do like to get you in trouble. He really had a problem with people staying on their parents' insurance?
Yeah, that was one of his big issues. And you know, the other issue he had recently was he didn't think freshmen should get financial aid because too many of them drop out of college. So he thinks you should get financial aid after your freshman year. He had some interesting proposals.
That is remarkable. Anything that we should keep our eye on that you're working on that hasn't hit the radar of the public?
Oh, I'll tell you, Sly. I mean, the big thing right now we're dealing with is this week is going to be the Trump budget, the scoring on the health care bill that we voted on a few weeks ago. Next week is a week we're back home, and honestly, I'm helping coordinate this effort to get people into other members' districts to let the public know what's going on. There is just so much we're juggling right now. It's been unbelievably busy in Washington, but we're making sure that we're making this work to the public's advantage, so they're actually getting full information about things. And beyond that, we're in the appropriations process just starting up. They've had to hold it off because of the health care bill. It's busy times these days.
Congressman Mark Pocan, thank you for spending some time with us today.
Absolutely, Sly. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Yep.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.